Welcome to Nicosia Uncut. Hello, Andromahi.
Hello, Kemal.
I missed making this introduction.
Yes. I have not missed you because I have I kept
you have been seeing
you.
Me regularly. Yes,
yes,
we've been
but
in touch.
I have also missed behind this being behind this mic.
Correct. I think we owe an explanation to our listeners. It was kind of intentional that we stayed away from the mics from Nicosia Uncut for some time. It's because Andromahi has been active in politics, and these days I'm also active in politics. We started this show as two activists, and now we are finding ourselves being in the center of Turkish Cypriot and Greek Cypriot politics, in the party politics. But now I think we've decided that the latest developments is too important not to miss it.
I think it's important to try and, regulate our presence once again. Indeed, it has been a hectic period. And, I got over and done with it, with the elections. Well, someone else might be starting soon enough. So,
having said that, however, I think why we are doing this program is because after 16 years, the United Nations Secretary General, a Secretary General visited Cyprus. And so, Andromahi, what happened? What's the outcome?
No, I think the outcome is that there is an attempt to keep a facade of a process going on. And in order for this to, in fact, materialize against all odds, it would require immense political will and pressure from the leaders and the guarantor powers, as it was constantly stated by the UN Secretary General during his presence here. So I think that the outcome is what the sides make of it. What the UN Secretary General tried to do, I believe, or ended up doing, because I think that maybe he wanted to do something greater, but didn't manage to in the end. But I think what in the end he tried to do was to keep the process going. He spoke of 5+1 conference that will take place at an unknown time and date. But he did make it clear that for that to happen, it would require, as he said, the right preparation and agreement on methodology. And so that was also important. So he kind of put the burden on the sides now for them to show willingness to engage in a constructive way. But in all honesty, and this is where the disappointment lies, these are things that we have heard before as well. I mean, the UN Secretary General came to Cyprus trying to do something, and he didn't manage to have something more substantial to say, rather, aside from, yes, we are continuing with the attempts.
Some people might call it glass half empty, glass half full, but I would rather call it glass 3/4 empty and glass 1/4 full. So we have a Secretary General visiting Cyprus, having a shuttle diplomacy, if I may, in 2 days between the leaders, and also having telephone conversations with the leaders of Turkey and Greece and all players, either directly or through his envoy. And the glass 3/4 empty is that we don't have a date for 5+1. We don't have an agreed confidence building measure, not even a single one. And there is not even a talk about any resumption of talks somehow. No, nothing about the content, no transition period as it was widely rumored and speculated. However, glass 1/4 full is the fact that he said that all sides have agreed to hold a 5+1. What does this mean? It means that sides have agreed that the ultimate aim is to bring all sides together, including the guarantor powers, to discuss how negotiations, how negotiations can resume, and how we can set up specific goals, if I may. And now, the second, whether it's empty or full, it's another discussion, point that we need to make is that he came up with three preconditions. I set preconditions intentionally because as Tufan had rejected, Tufan Erhürman, the Turkish Cypriot leader, had rejected the notion that he's putting preconditions, and he named it as a, he used the word methodology. He wanted certain things to be met, to be guaranteed before any kind of a resumption, any kind of talks to resume. And it seems that the Secretary General has kind of embraced it. So he said that in order to reach 5+1, we need to see confidence building measures progressing. We need to see some progress in the methodology. So he owned the word, Tufan Erhürman's word, and he used it himself. And he said that he wanted to see some progress in the essence, in the content of the talks. Now, we can all discuss whether these are preconditions or not, but for me, when I hear them, they are preconditions. He said that these needs to be the steps that needs to be taken. These are the bridges that will bring us to 5+1. He didn't name those as preconditions, but he says these are the things that needs to be done.
If I gave you the transcript of his statement and you read it without having in your mind this community discussion and, you know, Greek Cypriots, Turkish Cypriot and whatever, there is no way you would not understand that what he's saying is that these are preconditions. I mean, he said it. He openly said that we need preparation on confidence building, on methodology and on substance. And he said, because I do not want to go to another 5+1 conference that will have no results. So they are preconditions that they need to be made.
Interestingly, that last point as well, which is very important that you mentioned, that he literally said that he wanted a 5+1 that will be successful. If you remove his face and voice from that statement and stick Tufan Erhürman's face and voice into that, you wouldn't be surprised. It sounded as if, this is what I've been advocating, I'm not saying that this is a success story, but for Tufan Erhürman, it sounded as if it was him saying that. It was as if the Secretary General had been saying everything, was saying everything Tufan Erhürman was saying. So what does this mean? The other thing that made me say this very bluntly and openly is how Tufan Erhürman literally after when he had his own press meeting, he was all, you know, he kind of celebrating his victory subtly, of course, not openly. But everybody understood, and I understood the same way, that we cannot have 5+1 that will not be productive. This is what he said, Tufan Erhürman said. We need to have progress in this in the confidence building measures. This is what Tufan said. And we need to have a methodology agreed. This is what he came up with. This is his invention. And he even said that we need to have some progress in the content of it. And some of the points of his methodology was about also that. So I don't know how this will be regarded, and I don't know whether this is good. I mean, the fact that he is claiming this victory is one discussion, but whether this is good or bad is another discussion. I mean, I hope that this is something good. I hope that everybody will be committed to it, and I don't want these to be obstacles for the resumption of the talks.
So I think that I think that when we were speaking on the phone the other day discussing this, I remember you told me that your phrase was that Tufan's words became Guterres's words, and so I think that as a matter of fact, that could be understood as a given in the sense that yes, it is true. I mean, he spoke of the methodology, he spoke on the need to actually see some progress on other things before they go to a 5+1 conference, which is indeed what Tufan was advocating for. In my opinion, there are no winners or losers because as long as this does not substantiate, I cannot see it as anything else rather than as a matter of fact, let's say. And Kemal, we've said before in this podcast, it's been more than 2 years that we have been waiting for the opening of a crossing point, and they have not managed to even agree on this. Like, how are like they've met with the Secretary General in the course of this, they've met with Holguin, and they have not managed to reach a consensus on this. And if you look at the picture on the ground, there is no sense of urgency, there is no sense of preparation for something positive. Christodoulidis, I mean, in these dark anniversaries, the invasion anniversary the coup d'etat anniversary and everything, he played with the nationalists to a great extent. I mean, he n nowhere in his narrative was there a vision for this endeavor, for this united Cyprus that is to come out of this endeavor. There is no sense that something is happening. So it's like the society is not asking for it. Of course, yes, we did have people supporting the process, and we can discuss this at the end. People did mobilize, but this remains on the fringes. I mean, so there is no sense that. And this is why I said before that the outcome will be what the sides make of it. And we cannot be optimistic as to what they will make of it, because if they were, committed to this cause, you would see, like Erhurman said, in fact, that they should engage in more meetings between them. They should start a process amongst them that will be of greater collaboration in order to pave the way and prove to the Secretary General that we are ready. Because the most important thing of what was said was when UN Secretary General said that the UN cannot impose peace. I think that was the message. That was it. He was telling them, sort yourselves out, come up with some results, and then we can proceed. And on this, I'm gonna add the other note that this was the first time that the UN Secretary General directly referred to the guarantor powers and said that we need their contribution in order for this to succeed. That was important, and that's why I now want to ask you, Kemal, when it comes to this balancing act that Erhurman is attempting, I mean, between the UN, a willingness for a solution, his relationship with Turkey, that Turkey rejects the Bizonal Bicommunal Federation. So how do you see this in this light? And taking into consideration as well that indeed the Secretary General mentioned numerous times the need for the guarantor powers to also assist in this.
The elephant in the room is Turkey, definitely. And I think one of the success stories for Tufan Erhurman is that he's now proven that his points will make sense. He's proven it to Turkey. So I think Turkey will find it easier and more, it will find it easier to trust Tufan Erhurman. Not that they didn't, but now that's proven. I mean, he's proven his merit. He made a United Nations Secretary General to use the lingo that he's been using, and he will of course sell it to Turkey as a success story. I mean, he doesn't even need to do it. It's very clear. It's in front of everyone. So this is something that we will be seeing maybe less of Turkey and more of Tufan, because of course, the Greek Cypriot narrative that he's only the spokesperson of Turkey, and then he's just a puppet, this and that. We know how the official narrative, not official, but the general understanding in the Greek Cypriot psyche of the Turk Cypriot leaders. Now, I think we'll be seeing Tufan Erdogan more involved and more active, and then he's also more self-confident. And we've seen it in his press meeting, because he said, I'm ready to meet the Greek Cypriot leader on a weekly basis. I mean, he told everyone that I feel that one of my points is now met. He said that this is now substantive, this is result-oriented, it's a roadmap, and I feel that one of my points is now met. And so it shows how confident he is about his own position. Now, it's been 16 minutes since we started recording this podcast, and not even once we have mentioned the European Union. And indeed, I think this is also quite interesting.
The Greek Cypriots were mentioning it today, actually. Today we are the 30th of July. But yeah, we also discussed this privately the other day, that with all the fuss and all the discussion about the EU getting involved, it was clear that there was no mention of it. And I think we also said it again in the past in this podcast, that the UN has never been a part of these negotiations. It has always been an actor that has been following the process on the side, and at times it has contributed a lot when it comes to the discussion about the EU acquis, and the commitment to it in the discussions, but it has never been part of this negotiations process, and this is often missed. And in fact, today we had a statement by the Commission that was saying that the Commission is ready to assist in any way possible with all its tools, and they are also willing to engage in all the relevant meetings, they said. And this has been widely covered in the Greek Cypriot media in a way saying, you know, that, you know, trying to hype up the involvement of the European Union. But if we are to have a clear idea of what is happening, it is evident that the UN Secretary General chose not to mention the European Union. I understand that Turkey does not want also any mention of it. But even objectively speaking, it has never been part of it and the negotiations. Yeah. But its role in terms of following and in terms of this engagement. And I think it was a welcome development that we had the new appointment of an envoy. But this does not mean that the EU will become part of the negotiations.
The reason why I mentioned the European Union is basically twofold. I think we all appreciate that EU is a very important player, if we can talk about EU as a single player. Definitely EU is an important player, and definitely EU has a lot to contribute into the process. But when I said twofold, is number one, Turkey made it very clear, I think, to the Secretary General and to everyone, that our matters with our relationship with the European Union has nothing to do with Cyprus. We want to keep them separate. And we are not going to accept negotiating with EU. And we are never going to accept involving EU into the Cyprus talk negotiations. This is the first fault. And I think the fact that Secretary General has accepted that is, of course, is very clear. I mean, nowhere in his statements there was a mention. I mean, he mentioned that the guarantor powers contributions and everything, but he didn't even say, like, it is important that other players also support this process. Not even, you know, something, and mentioned the EU, and he didn't. And number two, the other fault is the idea that Turkey will be tempted with this formulation of Mr. Christodoulidis, and he literally sent the two top EU diplomats to Turkey to negotiate, to give this message that if you are going to have progress in the Cyprus talks, then will help you to, you know, support you in other areas. And Turkey literally rejected that. So this is a breakdown of this very simple logic. And now looking at it from today, it also sounded a bit crude, like a bit simple and easy. Something like a you treat Turkey like a carpet bargainer. Sometimes Turkey is a carpet bargainer, but even the carpet bargainer doesn't make it very openly. But when you treat your counterpart like, you know, if you give me this, I'll give you that, you know. Turkey has made it very clear to the EU as well, saying that, you know, we don't accept this logic. You need us a lot, and you need us even without Cyprus problem is solved. And you need us because we want to contribute into the security arrangement, and we made this big show off on the NATO summit. And we know that if you want to involve Cyprus into the security arrangement of Europe, you need to get our permission. And we also know that even if we, let's say, push for some progress in the Cyprus talks, you will still not accept us as an EU members because Turkey has an issue with democratic problems. Turkey is still having issues with, you know, with the migration. And so everybody understands that this is a no-go. And then I think we need to address. Now, the EU representative is now coming to Cyprus, or maybe he came already by the time we are recording it. And I think he has a role to play. I think it's important for him to listen to the Turkish Cypriot and Greek Cypriot sides and focus on how he can help the Turkish Cypriots and Greek Cypriots. I don't know whether they will be able to meet the expectations from Turkey. I don't know whether Turkey will accept to engage with this envoy, with this representative, the way Turkey is getting engaged with the United Nations envoy. But it is, you know, we are still yet, you know, we still don't know how things will be evolving on that front.
Well, it was interesting that Erdogan made sure to say that they support the efforts of the UN Secretary General. At the same time, I also agree. I mean, the EU has a very significant part in you know, making sure that these discussions they fall within the EU acquis and everything. But this does not mean that they form part of, you know, the mandate that the UN Secretary General has. I think at this point it is worth looking into how the sides kind of reacted to this and to what happened. I think that in the it is interesting that it seems like both sides tried to show a positive depiction of what happened. I mean, a Republic of Cyprus president, Nikos Christodoulidis, he was pretty jubilant. And I mean, when he was directly asked, you know, this discussion of methodology is indeed what Erdogan was talking about, and he refuted it. He said, no, it has to do with agreeing on where we've come so far, etc. So he's really trying to show that things are going well. Having said that, though, and I need to stress this, it's impressive how the attention from the Cyprus problem has suddenly shifted. Like it lasted 2 days. The focus was 2 days. And then now they are discussing whether the names of the father and the mother of a person are to be noted on one's IDs. So it goes to show how superficial this discussion on the Cyprus problem is, in fact, within the society. It's like, okay, let's tick this box. Let's pretend like we care for 2 days, and then let's get on with life as normal. So, which is kind of depressing to see because the future of the island is at stake. Literally, the UN Secretary General told us, look, you are in the middle of a region that is in flames. Please work on your issues and make sure that you do not become yet another, you know, erupted conflict in the region. I mean, this is what he told us, and we have just ignored him and looked the other way.
Tufan Erhürman was asked whether it will be possible to hold a 5+1 before Secretary General Guterres' term is over. And he says, yes, there is a possibility to have one, 5+1 before his term is over, which means his term is coming to an end by the end of this year. So he says that it is possible to do that. I'm still not sure whether he is doing it because he means that, you know, if you follow my conditions, there is always a possibility, or he really believed in it. If we are going to be pessimists, we might come up with this belief that those conditions will never be met. Therefore, 5+1 will never happen. And by the end of 2026, we are going to have a new Secretary General, and it will take time for him, ever, if ever, to commit himself into in the Cyprus problem. And we know that by the end of 2027, we are already in the you know, election mood for the Greek Cypriot leader. So this is the negative scenario: the fact that they will never agree on the confidence-building measures, they will never agree on the crossings. If you ask me, agreeing on the crossings now at the moment seems like is, you know, is more difficult than agreeing on the entire Cyprus problem. I don't know whether there will be an agreement on the methodology. I don't know whether there will be an agreement on what the content will be, the agenda of the 5+1 will be. Then I don't know. So this sounds a little pessimistic. However, if I want to be a little optimistic, now there is this positioning that if EU wants to, the EU wants to accommodate this process, and if Erhurman feels more confident about himself, to that he's more engaged, prepared to be more engaged, and he even says that some of his points are met now, his conditions are met, we will now look at the Greek Cypriot leader, he who continues to claim that he's committed. You and I, we are of course skeptics because of our past experiences, but we need to give ourselves, we need to give him a, you know, a benefit of doubt that maybe he might be needing to show some progress, in the talks before the election campaign starts.
Yeah, but that progress would not necessarily mean like a conference. It could be yet another round of discussions about the conference. I don't know, I'm on the bleak side of things. I kind of think that the most likely scenario is that they're not going to be in a position to make something out of it, that this process might kind of slowly f kind of fade away in the road. And if this happens, and with the new UN Secretary General, who we don't know who is going to be, I see a lot of the discussion in the UN is yet a whole podcast episode, like the dynamics and everything that's going to take place when it comes to the replacement. The one who will succeed the UN Secretary General. But I think that after that is we're going to just go down a period of uncertainty in which we will be very, very vulnerable and prone to a crisis. And so I put this like in my risk assessment about the island. I think this is a very likely scenario. Of course, you would like to think that, in an ideal world, you would have this sense of mobilization and urgency, but I cannot see it happening at this stage without a crisis. It's like we need something to wake us up, which is the human tragedy. We discuss it at a philosophical level, but yeah. So, as regards Christodoulidis, really, the people who are rallying around him are so much against the solution that I cannot see who will ever be around him to push him towards, doing something greater. So, and if you look at the way the players are positioning themselves ahead of the presidential elections, you can see who are the players who tried to show a more, pro-solution face, who are betting on the rejectionist vote. So, really, Christodoulidis is not betting on the pro-solution crowd. So, I cannot even see how he will be in a position to even take greater leaps forward. So I think, to as far as he's concerned, he likes to have this facade of negotiations going on. He has not acknowledged that basically the UN Secretary General came to Cyprus and, as you said, basically used to Fanerhurmans to describe what we are expected to have next, which is the bitter truth, I mean, for him. Yeah, and he can just keep on pretending that he's engaged in the process. I know I sound very cynical, but we are here. We will keep pushing. We saw a little window when we did try. We gathered outside the meeting point, etc. But the analysis cannot be optimistic.
It was interesting. It was kind of refreshing that we are now both involved in party politics, but on the same day, we were on the streets in the morning with the Unite Cyprus Now banner, and you were also in the south with the Unite Cyprus Now banner the same day. Even a little hope, a little dash of hope, brought people together. While the Secretary General was here, we were invited to this gathering with the civil society, as because we are still recognized as civil society activists as well, apart from our political roles. And I think we are. And you remember that I managed to ask him a question. I told him that everybody wants to see Cypriots getting mobilized for the solution to support the leaders or push the leaders. Madame Olguin has been saying this for ages, and I kind of told them that this is not going to be easy because people lost faith after so many failures. Why should people get mobilized thinking that the other side is the obstacle? And that's the dilemma. The Greek Cypriots believe that the obstacle is Turkey, and the Turkish Cypriots believe that the obstacle is Christodoulidis. And this is why they won't get mobilized, if you ask me. And I asked the Secretary General, Mr. Guterres, I asked him, is there any light at the end of the tunnel? How is it going to be possible to see people getting mobilized and engaged without any light at the tunnel? And I know that they're expecting us to mobilize and reach that light at the end of the day, and it's kind of a catch-22. But I told him, and of course, I mean, we didn't have this one-to-one question and answer session. They all collected all the questions. But I recall that he noted my remark. But that's also a truth, what you just said. I mean, with a little dash of hope, you see how people got mobilized.
Yeah, well, I think there are some people who are there and they do wait for this. And like personally, I even saw it like during my time, campaigning. There are people that you don't see in the forefront who are, silently waiting behind the scenes. There are people who at times they are dormant, but when they see the light, they re-engage and they need something to make them more committed. So I think this is why action and constant work for change is what we should be seeking, because this is the belief that things can change. But at the same time, when you are looking at the picture and trying to give an analysis of the situation, we need to be, setting aside our emotions and the fact that even if there is the slightest ray of hope, we will try to seek it and look at the picture clearly. And I think that the picture is how we kind of described it. And at the same time, during that meeting with the UN Secretary General, at some point he said that, it's like common sense is basically absent. And I think this is true in politics in general today. And the Cyprus problem is yet another part of it.
Yeah, Fiona will probably be, Fiona Mullen, our friend, will probably want to hear us saying that we need to engage the civil society and then have civic assemblies to support the process, which we of course support. And then
But can't you
to
think of a scenario in which, like, think about it from like think about it without being without having the restraints of our Cypriot reality. In an ideal world, wouldn't this process spark
Of course.
this
Of course.
a truth committee, civic assemblies like they are suggested currently by civic assemblies discussing aspects of the solution, making this kind of something
It was
that
also
the
agreed by the
whole
leaders.
island own.
It was agreed by
Yes,
the leaders in
yes,
the
yes.
last, you know,
Own
round of
it.
confidence
Allow
building
people to
measures.
own the process.
Yeah. And yeah, a peace process would involve all segments of the society. But I also found it a little disappointing when Secretary General said that through their leaders, they have to, you know, agree, you know, because he used that word.
Yes,
Maybe
he did.
just
He
wants
did
to,
use
yeah.
it.
But I think at the end of the day, I'm also disappointed that every time that we are focused on addressing some of the outcomes, some of the aspects, small or big, of the Cyprus problem, we end up hearing this, you know, it's better to focus on the comprehensive solution rather than getting into the tiny bit. I wish we had the comprehensive solution so we don't have to worry about each and every tiny bit, but we have been postponing such confidence building measures for ages, forever. And this is the sad part. Talking about comprehensive, which is a big supporter of it, is Özdil Nami. He literally spoiled the party and said that this was a failure, this is nothing to celebrate, and this was a very bad result, despite what Tufan Erhürman was saying. And everybody was thinking that he was the architect of the 4-point methodology. In fact, this methodology was based on what he had previously, Özdil Nami had been saying. But this, you know, complained about the statement that, you know, literally challenging Tufan Erhürman is now, it's a sign that there is a cleavage over there as well. Why it's important, maybe it is not. But at the end of the day, I think what Tufan is thinking that number one, he is more confident about himself. Number two, he has more leverage toward Turkey and he will be able to convince Turkey easier than he used to in the past. Number three, I think he will maybe be a little bit more flexible on some of the points now that he's feeling more confident that he's been saying. And number four, I think although we criticize the European Union and all, you know, how they couldn't successfully support the process, I think they have a role to play. I think not directly through the Cyprus problem, but also having continuous connection and discussions with Turkey on other areas, and not linking it directly to Cyprus problem, but automatically at certain parts it will link to Cyprus, and it will kind of help Turkey to focus more on productive parts of this discussion, and hopefully will maybe bring us more openings. And this is what Niyazi Kızılyurek was writing as well. I don't know if you read his article.
Yeah, I saw it, but just a comment and just to come to Özdil's defense, I think Özdil is speaking because he's out of politics now. He's speaking as, you know, a person who wants to see things moving and he wants to see something tangible. Erhürmann, obviously, he's a
Some
politician.
people
He
say that he's
wants.
bitter because he's outside the equation.
Okay. I think he, to be honest, in all my interactions, I have got the understanding that he wants to be out of politics, to be honest. So, but I don't know. I mean, no way of
No,
knowing, but.
Özdil has been part of the civil society now. He's contributing in Cyprus Peace and Dialogue Center. He's writing his points. He's going on TV and he's just trying to present his
Yeah, to
perspective.
Werner Herman is a politician. He wants to hype himself. He wants to present his successes. I think this is what he has to do in a sense. So I see both sides in this, and I can
What
understand
about the
both
European
sides.
Union?
Oh.
What Niazi said, and that the EU has a role to play
I think
to.
the EU is, I mean, Niazi has been for long speaking about this federal structure and momentum and everything to start becoming reality on the ground. To be very honest, though, I'm not going to change, I'm not going to divert away from my bleak outlook. To be honest, I do not think that the European Union has the political stamina, willingness, and backbone to support something so comprehensive, actually.
What about the step-by-step approach, the transition, the delaying the referenda? And before the Secretary General arrived to Cyprus, all papers were writing about this. But during that time, nobody was discussing. When he was here, nobody discussed about such things.
To be honest, I believe that things were discussed and are being discussed, but again, I think that even for all this discussion about transitional period and everything that we saw being written in the press, even for that, it requires political will. It requires, the backbone to come forward and say, guys, let's take this up. I mean, it's not. And I think at the end of the day, this is why I spoke of a process that might actually just fade away and erode through time, because there are the agents that will feed it, the agents that will make it flourish, the agents that will want it to become stronger, the process, they're just not there. So that's why every time we come up with these step-by-step discussions and everything, again, we discussed it on this podcast in the past. You have another set of obstacles in discussing even those. How are they going to come about? And I mean, it's like hundreds of little Cyprus problems kind of hidden into them. So, I mean, if you had the political willingness, you would have also been in a position to actually make the leap forward to actually solve the problem, to be honest. I mean, yeah.
Andromeda, we are back to in north in the Turk Cypriot community. We are back to the elections. UBP's was very weak after they supported Mr. Tatar, and Mr. Tatar did like terribly in the elections. And everybody was saying that okay, CHP will be the leading party, and in the polls they are still leading. But recently, UBP started to gain ground. They are known to be an election party. Like once the elections are getting closer, they're bringing together all their supporters and
The
everything.
mechanism.
But possibly we are going to have a left-leaning, a social democrat, a socialist, whatever you call it, Turkish Cypriot leader, and now a Turkish Cypriot prime minister. If she manages to have a good coalition partner in the parliament, there is also a possibility that besides UBP and CTP, we might be seeing the other contenders to for the third place. One is TDP, my party. The Greek Cypriots would probably know that party as Mr. Akıncı's and Mr. Harmancı's party. The other contender is Kudret Özersay. I think everybody remembers him as negotiator and the former foreign minister of the Turkish Cypriots, who's not welcomed by the other political parties because Avi literally brought down the coalitions for with no reason in the past. And number three is, of course, YDP, infamously known as the Settlers' Party. And we have the DP, the current coalition partner, is struggling. Based on the success of the party that will make it to the third and the fourth places, we might as well be seeing a left-leaning coalition in the Turkish Cypriot parliament for the first time in the history of the Turkish Cypriots. And that might also help Tufan Erhürman a bit, because he's not very comfortable with the current coalition. Let's remind our readers, let's remind our listeners that we have a parliamentary system in the north, and in theory, the Turkish Cypriot leader, as known as, you know, the Turkish Cypriot president, has very limited powers constitutionally. But because historically the Turkish Cypriot presidents are recognized as Turkish Cypriot leaders, they are always elected on the notion, on the base of managing the Cyprus problem. So, you know, it might empower Mr. Erhürman with the confidence-building measures, with the crossing points, with the issues in Pilav, you know, all these tensions in the buffer zone will probably be more under control, hopefully. And of course, it, you know, we'll yet to see the campaigns. We have the local elections also, the municipal elections on the 6th of December, and the leading UBP, the leading coalition party, wants to have both elections on the same day. It might sound reasonable to our listeners, but the problem is that we have horizontal voting at the moment, which means that, you know, to vote in a box will last for, I don't know, it will take 10 minutes minimum if you are voting also horizontally, and counting them will be miserable. So there is a talk that maybe horizontal voting will be cancelled. Still, all speculation, we are yet to see.
In the 2024 European elections, in fact, the Republic of Cyprus held for the first time the local administration elections on the same day with the European elections. And it was, you know, kind of saved money. But it's going to be interesting to see how it shapes up in the Turkish Cypriot community, and especially if horizontal voting will be indeed this easy to kind of abolish. But I think, oh my, it's we took longer than expected. We wanted it to be kind of a short comeback discussing what happened, but yeah, it took a bit longer. We never managed it, right? So yes, I think we should wrap it up now.
Yes, I mean, I think it's fair to say that the visit has not produced as many results as many have hoped, but we still have the five plus one on the horizon. However, we are yet to see how the UN will manage to bring sides together on that path. So that's, I think, the summary of it. We'll follow it up and then we'll keep you updated.
It is what we make of it. Enjoy.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus. Island Talks. Open, diverse, free.